My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about The Room, which is a puzzle game developed and published by Fireproof Games for iOS and Android in 2012.
Yeah, it's got bad SEO.
It does. Terrible.
So yeah, it's hard to search for. Mm-hmm. And one of our first iOS exclusive kind of things, or almost exclusive. Like, this got ported to everything, but right. iOS primary.
Yeah, games. Like iOS first. That's a little true with Sayonara Wild Hearts as well.
Yes.
To a degree. Yeah. But this is something we do very rarely, if not ever before.
Yeah, and it's a gaming ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one we're both invested in. I don't see any reason not to cover these games.
No. I mean, especially if they're substantial like this, right?
Yeah. This is a good-ass series mm-hmm. of games. I want more people to check it out. Hmm. It is, in these games, you play as just a nameless person there, and you're solving the disappearance of an acquaintance. You only know as their initials for AS. And you do so by solving puzzle boxes.
Yes.
It's not quite the early ones. It kind of does the puzzle box to escape room mm-hmm. Continuum.
Yes.
As the games go on. The first one, it is firmly in puzzle box. You have a strange puzzle box left in the attic, which AS left as a test to make sure his research could only get into the hands of somebody capable of handling it.
we're in nine hours, nine persons, nine doors territory.
To save the
world, you must solve the pegboard puzzle from
the junior jumble barrel. That allows you to, yeah, like certain Eldritch junior jumbles will allow you to access the secrets of the universe.
Yeah. This is a puzzle game that is kind of in the vein of Myst, kind of right down to the anonymous protagonist that's supposed to be you kind of deal. It's mechanical contraptions, a series of them. Mechanical contraptions within doohickeys, within devices. And you have to figure out how to manipulate them in order to bypass them and unlock the clue or the key that will help you deal with the next puzzle.
Yes. There's definitely some escape room DNA in this, where you are every once in a while, a puzzle will give you a doodad or tool
mm-hmm.
that is used in another part of the box. It's also much more, tactile, than a lot of that kind of thing. And specifically so puzzle boxes, I don't know if you've ever gone deep on puzzle box YouTube.
No.
Puzzle boxes are cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I think you'd like it. There's a craft element to it that's really fun. Puzzle boxes are one of the coolest things that exist. There are maniacs who sell like $2,000, $3,000 puzzle boxes that are these intricate, beautiful little pieces of art that you have to manipulate in certain ways to get open and are full of secret compartments and cool shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
What this game presupposes is we're going to give you one and it's impossible.
Yeah.
Not impossible to complete, but impossible to exist.
Right.
It does things that puzzle boxes, a lot of these things are based in things that actual puzzle boxes can do.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them are not, and not within the space constraints.
Mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So this is a way to get your hand on a really, really, if you're this kind of puzzle wank, a really, really expensive, impossible, impressive puzzle box.
Yeah. Right there on your phone.
Yes. Yeah. Or on your Switch if you want.
Oh yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Whatever you want to do. And thus it is super mechanically simple. You tap and click things, you rotate, you zoom in different places. You have inventory, but inventory is never used for longest journey style puzzles. You know, you're never combining shit. You look at stuff in your inventory sometimes, but mostly you just use it.
Yeah. You look at stuff and occasionally there's like the end of a key that you need to rotate, you know, or something you need to reconfigure so it will fit into another slot. Yeah.
Yes.
These puzzle box, like this puzzle box would not be structurally sound. It is entirely small, fun little compartments.
Yes. Yeah. But what a dream.
No. Oh, yeah.
I have nothing I would, you know, peek behind the curtain. You know, Cole and I are friends. We're not just business partners. For Christmas, you got me a very thoughtful gift, which is a Mimic, which is a ceramic treasure chest that opens up into a sculpted Mimic. And it's just sitting on my desk. I have nothing I can put in there. I don't know what to put in there. See, that goes quadruple for puzzle boxes. What the fuck am I going to put in a secret compartment? like what possible secrets do I have?
Well,
let alone dozens.
I mean, like, if it was like 10 years ago, it would be your weed.
If I smoked weed 10 years ago, you know, exactly. But even then, like, I don't know, that's putting a weird test for your parents.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, if you're smart enough to do the junior jumble, you get to have a long conversation with me.
Yeah.
Dad. But there's no use for this. It's just in the category of like secret room / Murphy bed.
Yeah.
That is just undeniably fucking cool. I have no idea how to explain it. Like if that doesn't seem cool, if like a little secret compartment doesn't seem cool to you, I don't know what to do.
It's a
you've countered me.
Yeah. there's no way forward from here. Like if the idea of I'm looking at something that feels normal, but suddenly there's an exposed mystery.
Yes.
Like that implies the existence of other mysteries and brings a sense of, you know, whimsy and wonder into your world. I don't know what to tell you.
It's not about the contents or anything like that. Yeah. Like, and that ends up being kind of important to this because there's a narrative framing device in this that I think is better than it needs to be, but is not the most compelling thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know, better than it needs to be. So, but it's literally the journey. Like it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I told you this before. One of my really good friends, I don't want to out them, on the podcast, but you met him, at my wedding. His father, passed away. His father was a woodworker.
Okay.
He found secret compartments in his father's desk that were just stuffed full of cash.
Whoa.
His father had made like false drawers and false compartments.
Oh man, that's the fucking dream there. Oh my God.
And it's like, here's like $3,000. But like, you know, I mean, in that case, it was about the contents. What a cool thing to find out about. I was just like, oh man, was your dad one of the Kingsmen? Such a cool idea.
And there was...
when I met him, he wasn't that. You know, he wasn't that cool. But yeah.
No, that's the dream right there. God.
All right.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And we talked about like finders keepers and shit. You know, Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff, this kind of tactile kids hidden shit thing. There's something about this that makes me feel young.
Yeah,
that is just really, really satisfying to me.
A few Christmases ago, my brother, who is the best gift giver that anyone will ever
meet. He's great.
He's astoundingly good at it. What he ended up getting for my niece, you know, was like tickets to go and do stuff, but that's underwhelming to open. So instead he created like a little puzzle box for her. You know, and it was just like, you just did a little scavenger hunt to find the keys or whatever. And inside was a little, oh gosh, what are those things called? Like a cryptex. You know,
okay.
The cylinder that you can line up a word and then popped it open. And inside was like the printout of the gift of like all this stuff we're going to do over the next, you know, few
that's
months.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's dream dad behavior right there.
Yep.
Yeah, that rocks.
Perfect.
Yeah. So anywho, that's the appeal.
Yes.
You're rotating things around and fiddling with a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
They add magic to it.
They do.
Early on, you get a magical eyepiece that lets you see things that are not normally visible.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically like if you're stuck or if it needs to convey impossible information to you.
Mm-hmm.
Throw on the monocle.
Yeah. There's like a photo that you look at that is just a photo with your naked eye. With the lens, it turns into like a little 3D fly through of a house.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a pen that if you look at it, and then if you turn it upside down and then put on the eyepiece, the lady takes off her bikini.
Mm, scandalous.
Like there's a whole thing.
Part of that puzzle box satisfaction is that everything is modeled physically in a way that feels a little silly on a PC. If I'm being honest, it's a little,
yes.
You know, I rotate my mouse in order to mop the floor kind of David yes. Cage kind of shit on a phone or on the iPad, which is where I first played this. It is really cool to just like tap and swipe and just, you know, kind of like do this a little bit more, quote unquote, directly with your hands. Right.
Yes. It feels very tactile.
Yes.
You know, that's the word I kept coming back to revisiting this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that idea of like, I'm actually exploring something with my hands, mm-hmm. Pushing on things, noticing this has a little seam. And then like, what happens if I just rub that part of the screen? Oh, it moves.
Yeah. I wish that the puzzles were harder, Carrie. Maybe later in the series. No individual puzzle is a real head scratcher.
No.
If I got stuck, it was an observational problem. It's because, you know, the thing that I needed to interact with, I didn't notice.
The weird thing about puzzles in a puzzle box sense, in my limited experience with puzzle boxes, is that they are really kind of broken as puzzles,
mm-hmm.
because the solution isn't something you intuit with information you have. It's something that comes to you from trying a lot of things and exploring to see what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the game does that, right? Mm-hmm. Like you are clicking on stuff and it's like, oh, this moves. I didn't know that it moved. That gives me this little thing that I can insert into this doodad. You know, it's not something where there's information. There's no metaphor to mm-hmm. the puzzles generally. There's a couple like word things, stuff like that. That's not, you know, a couple of riddles, right? But not very much in the way of that. It's kind of a lane of puzzles that makes us, if it's rigorous, it's because you have to just try everything.
Yeah.
Like another way to put it is like a hard puzzle box with a hard puzzle just has a lot of steps.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard because you're making a stronger or wider intuitive leap.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you have to do a lot of things.
Yes.
To make it work.
Axis on which difficulty expands is intricacy.
Yes, exactly. And that is, in my mind, not the most interesting axis mm-hmm. for traditional puzzles. Like the novelty of this presentation and kind of the, you know, the what it's selling of mm-hmm. having this cool little object and that feeling of finding secret compartments is what rounds up for the simplicity of the puzzles, because they're only kind of puzzles. Like they're more just like little tasks and way of figuring out how an object works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I agree with you that it's missing that intuitive leap. You don't get aha moments in this so much as, oh shit, there's a cool little secret compartment. Isn't that neat?
Yes. Yeah.
Is kind of how I feel. Mm-hmm. I wish it was harder too. They do get harder.
Yeah.
As they go. This is the easiest one. They were kind of experimenting, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that kind of builds into that simplicity is how linear this is.
You know,
you're presented with a bunch of stuff, you know, all sides of this 3D object, you know, to go and look for something to manipulate. But like, you're finding the beginning of a thread, and then, you know, the output of one puzzle becomes the input of another, be that a key, be that a word, or just literally opening or exposing whatever you need.
Like a new busy board.
Yeah, like you need to do next.
Yes. Yeah. The sequels, when they start expanding the scope, you start having to use elements from one room in another. Like you actually start walking around a house.
Yeah.
And stuff. And it does kind of complicate that. But again, they're still using abstract shapes and objects. So you're not necessarily making intuition leaps
mm-hmm.
as much as maybe you'd want to
in
that. We talked about the little compartments in this. There is a hint system in this. The hint system is worked over time,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. I don't know that I've seen this necessarily, something exactly like this. Instead of you being able to, you know, we've seen you choose a hint and they punish you a little bit. Like you have to do the memory match. in case of the Golden Idol, or you want to do a hint and there's a currency mm-hmm. for it, like Professor Layton. In this, after it's decided you spent enough time on a thing, it mm-hmm. will give you a hint.
Which doesn't feel great when you're just observing like something and you get the little boom.
Do you want a hint? I'm like, no, I'm just give me a second to bake. Like,
yeah,
it's also the hints are pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's hard to do graduated hints. Mm-hmm. I used to work in an escape room. It was my job to come up with graduated hints, for a while for puzzles that I knew really well. And it is hard to come up with that. Like, what is the hint that points somebody in the right direction, but doesn't give it too much away?
Yes.
There's a real skill to being like a clue master kind of thing. And these are all just like, the first hint is always like, I wonder what's on the front of this. it's something really, really stupid and basic. Like, I know to look at the puzzle, man.
Yeah.
That's not helpful. And then the third hint gives it away.
Yes.
It's I think that this is something they also got better at mm-hmm. as the series went on.
Yeah. Visually, this game, at the time when it came out, it was kind of a revelation, mm-hmm. it was kind of up there with, oh God, I always forget the name of the, first person fighting game, that is now Lost Media.
Swords.
Yeah.
Blade Crunch.
Infinity Blade. Yeah. As being like a graphical tour de force to kind of tell you that mobile games aren't just Peggle anymore, that kind of thing. So like getting this and especially playing it on an iPad right when it came out was just a real treat. Not like it was that much more detailed or visually, more of a visual spectacle than what was happening on consoles, but that it was happening on this little, a little portable device.
Right? On a phone.
Yeah.
Potentially like on a thing you use to make phone calls to mm-hmm. text. Infinity Blade games are cool.
Yeah.
That'd be a fun thing to think about at some point. Like the idea of taking combat and iPhone and making it punch out mm-hmm. is smart.
Yeah.
Soundtrack. And this is like moody. It's good atmosphere. There are a lot of atmospheric sound effects that mm-hmm. happen. This is a vaguely spooky game.
Mm-hmm.
That did not come home to roost for me until the VR version.
Yeah.
Actually feeling spooked out.
Mm-hmm.
And as mentioned before, the writing is serviceable. The story is very tropey.
Yes.
I think but better than it needs to be. This mm-hmm. could just be a series of puzzle boxes. Instead it is, this, somebody's invested in this tale. You go through the sequels and everything. It is telling a long story about this forbidden element.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Talking a little bit about the development, this studio, Fireproof, was formed by a bunch of people who worked on what can only be considered the polar opposite of this series, mm-hmm. which is the Burnout series. They were at Criterion Games and kind of met each other developing Burnout 3 and Burnout Paradise.
Love it.
Yeah.
This kind of sucks, right, guys? You guys, what about a box? What if we did something about like those old hi-fis that people have in their house? What if one of those contained weed compartments? Would you like to make a game about that? But yeah, make it on your phone. Yes.
So they began as a freelance art company, making assets for other studios and a bunch of games before in 2012 they decided to make a game of their own. And taking this from an article in The Guardian, their decision to work on iOS was primarily for cost.
Yeah. Making that decision, they decided to make Lemonade.
Yeah.
Make hay out of it. They wanted to make a really great mobile game and bring a big kind of console experience to phones, which at the time they did. Again, mm-hmm. feels quaint now. At the time, this was very much the case. This was competing directly, not just with, console games or anything, but this was competing with like hidden object games.
Yes.
That was the audience that this was blindsiding at the time.
Yeah.
Game initially was only for iPad, but then came to phones when they were powerful enough to handle the graphics there. That's why I replayed this on my phone. And it was a huge deal. It won a lot of awards. It got a BAFTA for Best British Game.
Mm-hmm.
It is a well-lauded series.
Yes. And this is the first game of a series. They have been pumping them out. The Room 2 was released in 2013. The Room 3 was released in 2015. These follow the story of the main character as he continues pursuing this, incomprehensible element and you kind of go dimension hopping a little bit.
Yes. There is the Room Extended Universe here. Because the fourth game is called The Room Old Sins. That was released in 2018. This tells a separate story, but it's in the same universe. And the thing that made me, I wanted to ramp onto at some point, possibly because, you know, I'm cooler on VR than you are, than a lot of people are. Possibly I think the most successful VR game that I have played is possibly The Room VR, A Dark Matter, which is an escape room that you're in.
Yeah.
This is a new story. It's in 2020. It is taking this game that is about physically, you know, the joy of using your hands and physically manipulating things is a perfect fit for VR. It takes that entertainment jump of like, oh, I'm actually doing the thing. I'm pulling a chain, you know, and I'm actually simulating the motions. It takes that to like a really logical extreme.
Yeah.
You know, I, with my finger on an iPad, I can just move a little panel to the side, but now I can like lift lids.
It gets more of your body involved in it, which is, you know, like, yeah, there's no resistance, there's no weight to it, but it is still, you know, activating your proprioception or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a really nice feeling to it, and the atmosphere works really well in that because you know, I'm always a little bit scared when I'm in a VR helmet, you know, because there could be anything around me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like Freddy could be right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know. So this idea of this kind of spooky game with this atmosphere where you're looking for hidden compartments and hanging around like haunted sarcophagi and shit is extra spooky for me in VR.
Yeah. And that's the series. I would like to. I got a little bit into The Room VR before getting distracted. I'm looking for anything to do VR on the show. Anything, but something we can both agree on, that'd be fun.
I'm not against it. It literally makes me sick and I don't have space for it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to the space thing I'm hoping to address.
Yeah.
So if that happens, it'll be easier. To do more. I still think that there's a little bit of an audience, you know, thing with it where it's like doing things that a very small proportion of our audience actually has access to. So we have to keep our powder a little dry on it, we could certainly do more. It just right now I have this, you know, 5 foot by 5 foot space.
Yeah. It's a little constrained.
It makes it tough to do.
Yeah. You ever jump into that Walkabout mini golf?
Not yet. It's come recommended and I bought it. Based on your recommendation, but I just, like I said, I don't have space for it. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
So it's hard to go through the mental overhead of setting it up when it feels like there's like a 50-50 chance I'm just going to bump into a keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, or bump into a bookshelf and then have a huge mess and then just feel irritated.
Yeah.
You know.
Makes sense. And also during this episode, I just ordered a lament configuration. So.
Oh.
There we go.
I also have a lament configuration unsolved in my living room.
Nice.
Keeping it unsolved. My plan for that is someday go and grab coffee and leave it solved on the floor for when Liv comes home. to see if anything happens. I'm not a prank spend. Like, I'm not a prank husband, but I'll let her off the hook really fast. But I've been planning that for a little bit.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get into it. This is fair warning for people who don't like these. This will be a shorter episode. This is a shorter game.
Yes. Although it took longer than I expected to be. My Steam playtime was like 3.5 hours, probably from taking notes, but yeah.
Yeah. It can be, you know, depending on, and when I do this kind of thing, even these puzzles are not particularly rigorous. I didn't grease lightning through this.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to touch all the things.
Yeah.
You know, so the way that I generally approach these is I spend a lot, you know, I get up, you know, I go have a beverage, sit, look at my phone, then go back to it.
Yeah.
Like I this is almost like second screen gaming for me, in a weird way.
Yeah. We're also going to be kind of a little bit zoomed out on this. If we went step by step, it would be stultifying. It breaks our format a little bit.
Well, think about the Professor Layton episode.
Yeah.
You know, that had a lot more plot to go through, but we also didn't want to describe matchstick puzzles. you know, to you, that seems really, really boring. So we're going to talk about some kind of general principles of it and the way that it reveals itself more than anything.
I know that it would be stultifying because that was the first version of the notes that I wrote. And then I went back through and I cut like 1500 words out of it.
go back to that, that paperback book I have that is a text walkthrough of the first three Mario games. That is literally just, you come up to the end of the platform. When you get to the end of the platform, jump, you'll have to jump for a medium amount. Like it's like Towns and Recipes.
So the game opens, you're up in an attic looking at this large puzzle box. It's kind of like a safe kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And this is our tutorial. Nothing here is especially hard, but it is teaching us to look closely at things, to, you know, manipulate objects, even in our inventory. And our introduction to the lore here is a letter that was left by AS. There's a key sealed to it in wax.
Yep. We learn AS's housekeeper abandoned them shortly after the rest of the world did. Mm-hmm. The answers you seek are inside this box, along with this unique object that is the key to incomprehensible power.
Yes.
It's a gun.
it's an off button for people.
It kind of is. Yeah. Like, it is kind of a magic gun. Yeah.
Yeah.
The element is an off button for people.
He says this safe, you know, all of these puzzles were designed to filter people out, you know, to keep this object out of the hands of lesser minds. So
yes,
here are two rings. Can you get them apart?
you have to have a conceit for somebody to give you information and make it a test at all, you know, and this is the only one that exists.
Yep.
Do you remember us wrapping around the axle in Bonfireside Chat trying to figure out why Sen's Fortress, you know, for like a season, like, why is there just a trap hallway on the way to the thing? Uh-huh. And test is the best we can do.
Yeah.
There's no other reason to put up a swinging blade, you know?
But they say, hey, this key, you know, is my final gift. It's a gift to you, saying, keep this eyepiece with you always. Without it, you are as blind as the rest. The stakes are higher than you could possibly imagine.
Seems like an exhausting friend.
Little bit. And you use the key to open up the small ornate box containing an eyepiece that doesn't have a lens, note saying, feed me and I shall survive. Give me drink and I shall die.
One of the few riddles.
Yeah.
In the game, this is a really, really easy basic riddle. But I'm a fan of riddles because mm-hmm. they require, it's not just, you know, logic. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of intuition. Okay. That's fire.
Yes.
Is what the answer to that riddle is. You look on the safe itself and there's a plaque on the back, from this talisman company. Bespoke safes for the gentry.
Fuck
thief
them.
And fire proof.
Bespoke safes for the gentry.
Talisman is the company that makes all the doodads in this series. Yeah. And it's part of the extended universe. Talisman also makes the stuff in the sequels that are not part of this main story.
Right. Yeah. You kind of deal with them directly in the third one, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So the puzzle here is just, it's all simple. Fire's your first clue. There's a leg that is marked with a little fire symbol that gets mm-hmm. you a 3D key. That the head kind of looks like a little cage that you have to rotate to fit into a bunch of different slots.
Yeah. Like a little bit of conception puzzles, like 3D space.
Yeah.
You know, kind of conception to make that fit into different keyholds. Once you do, you get this wrench to lever off that manufacturer plate. Voiding the warranty, annulling the warranty, and then revealing the lens for the eyepiece. Mm-hmm. It's completed, and there's a little jump moment here of you know, the first time I saw it, I was impressed by this.
Yeah.
When you put on the lens, the entire safe is covered with like runes, mm-hmm. this blue neon paint, and it has that like, oh, you're in a crazy person's room kind of feeling.
Yeah. Or you turned on a black light in a hotel room.
In one or the other. Yes. Or in an arcade.
Oh, true. Yeah. No. This reveals a pattern that you need to line up on some concentric circles. So many of the puzzles in this are just, hey, line up this pattern or make it look like something, by rotating your view just a little bit. There's some like Senua's Sacrifice stuff in here.
Yes, very much so. There's a specific symbol that is like the arc symbol or whatever that you end up having to line up your view a lot to create.
Yeah.
This opens the safe, revealing another box. We all groan at it shit. And it starts chapter two. And this one, each one of these is on, you know, a box.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing this on this ornate box as six sides. There are three seals on one side of the box, a keyhole, a gear, and an eye.
Yeah.
Here.
So we're going to be opening those kind of in order. And there's nothing apparent to mess with, but the eyepiece will reveal some fingerprints on one of the edges. So there must be something there. Fun little compartment with a book. And it's locked by more rotating discs. And the book is a journal. Says, AS's research is going really, really slow, feeling stuck right now. They're searching for something between earth and fire, between water and ale. And whoever, wrote air. This.
Between water and ale is just yes. carbonation.
Yeah,
that's just beer.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I don't know what that was. Yeah, between water and air. maybe I can use a beer. But they're looking for basically what amounts to dark matter, right?
Yes.
You know, this final element, this null. What is the nothingness between everything?
Yes. And there's this little wind-up key inside. So we turn our attention over to the eye lock. One panel of this ornate box is kind of iridescent. If we use the eyepiece, it's partially transparent. And there are fragments of numbers we can line up there by changing our view of this. This creates a combination. It looks a little bit like a magic eye.
Mm-hmm.
The big goofy letters.
Yeah.
This. This combination opens one big side of the box to this zoetrope.
Mm-hmm.
Device. There's nothing projecting an image, and there's no way to view it right now.
Yeah. So we need to figure out how to activate this. There's a little lighter ignition device on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to look elsewhere on the box for things you need to twist to get a wick for the igniter, and also a little mini telescope to zoom in on the projection, right?
Yep. The wick goes in the ignition device. This makes the light for a projection. The telescope lets you view this little animation of a man whose face is scratched out, sitting at a table looking at the ornate box.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at this through the eyepiece changes it. The man has the word trial written above him, and he points to it.
Mm-hmm.
So solving another puzzle, gets this little tile with an L, which is one of the astute minds, is one of the letters in trial.
Yeah.
Which we can then use.
Yeah. It's the final letter on a little input for a bunch of letters, right?
Yes.
A little combination Scrabble lock.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the effect of scratching out somebody's face in a photo like that.
It looks real great. Well, yeah. And why it's happening in this game is cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find out here. I guess spoilers for the room.
Yeah, probably.
If people care. Mm-hmm. This element, this null element, erases somebody from existence, and it does the cool version of that where it happens retroactively.
Mm-hmm.
So like photos of them, they're not just gone from this point forward, they're gone from this point past as well.
Yeah.
So photos of them have their faces scratched out.
It's like that. Yeah, it's like that photo of Stalin where the guy's there and he's not. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't look like anything to you.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a cool idea. That's a very tropey thing.
Mm-hmm.
That felt a little, I don't know that it was fresher, but felt a little fresher to me in 2012,
mm-hmm.
As an idea. And it's something I'm always a little weak to.
Yes.
I think the idea of erasing something conceptually.
Yeah.
Not just physically is really interesting.
Yeah.
Think about, the metaphysical innocence,
mm-hmm.
Thing from, the Labyrinth.
Yes.
From that cult in, that Delta Green book.
Mm-hmm.
Where you do something and just nobody knows about it because you're metaphysically innocent. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Also scary. I mean, just the idea of like, okay, I can die, but, you know, being totally forgotten is a death beyond death. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it just, something's wrong if that happens.
Well,
you know, like what if you were to wake up one day and be the only person who remembered the Beatles? I can't take, Will and I did a bit about that recently. And it reminded me of that very funny concept. And just like, if that happened to me, nothing would change.
Oh,
there wouldn't be a movie.
Without the Beatles, would the Kinks have gotten that popular?
I mean,
though?
Okay. The Kinks were also, were contemporaries.
Yeah.
I think the Kinks would have done well. There are other bands that probably wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
But I would just be like, oh, that band didn't, I can't find any of their records.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the Beatles don't come up that often.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the Beatles got null elemented is the point.
Yeah, you go to that little input and you spell out trial. You know, you put the L tile in, and you know, the zoetrope retracts and the eye seal, the eye lock opens up. There are two more left, the keyhole and the gear. And we're going to work on the keyhole one next.
Yes. So the trial phase opens up, out comes the safe, and a note on top of it is the second journal entry. This is on 2-7. There's a hexagonal symbol marked on it and details about what other cultures call the Nal.
Yeah.
The Nal is like the Iron Crown in Darkest Dungeon or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone has a word for it, but they're all different.
Yes.
Because it's this elemental thing.
Yeah. Like in one culture, it's just up.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So this next major puzzle here is an iridescent panel that you look through that shows you a fragmented version of the Nal symbol, and you have to rotate your view when you're zoomed in on it to, kind of recreate that Nal symbol. This is repeated. I would say too much.
Yes.
We're just going to call it a Nal symbol puzzle. They complicate it by adding in things that you need to rotate or manipulate. So you don't just have to find the right angle. You have to line up the different pieces, you know, conceiving of it in 3D space, to make it happen.
And the Nal symbol is relatively complex for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like a backward seven,
mm-hmm.
you know, or something like that. Like there are a lot of pieces to it. So this puzzle escalates well. I would agree it does it too many times.
Yes.
Yeah. Another side of the box has this input for four symbols on a grid. This matches some markings that you've seen around the box, which will give you the combination there.
Yeah.
And unlocks a series of keys until you get to this brass star that you unlock. This yeah. little bit.
Yeah. You place the star into a star-shaped hole, and you get these kind of six panels around it. The six panels kind of around the top, like around the crown, revealing these knight figurines. One of them is missing something. We've got to find something for it. But there is a dial ring that we use, and kind of a safe cracking thing a little bit later. There's also a journal entry. You know, AS is, you know, it has accidentally used himself as a test subject.
That seems like a hard thing to do as an accident.
Yeah, yeah. He just he walked into the chamber without disabling the mechanism.
The mechanism. This is what happens in The Watchmen. This revealed the Nal to him.
Right.
Yeah. If you like nouns,
mm-hmm.
That you will like this game.
Yeah.
So he studied the properties, specifically how it affected the reflection of light.
Yes.
There. So he's playing with this new toy. He found an Eldritch toy and he's playing with it.
Yeah. That's how you create the eyepiece, right?
Yep.
You know, imbuing it with the Nal so it refract light differently.
Yes.
There are a couple of different safe cracking puzzles here where you have to just basically without numbers turn something and see how far it goes before it resets, and then just memorize how many notches you went before going the other way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doing this will make this little tube stick pop out. It'll take a two-digit number, which we can see revealed by the eyepiece. And this gets you the key that you need to open the safe and the keyhole lock, moving us on to the gear lock.
Yeah.
And this is this huge clockwork busy board. When we say busy board, that's a thing, those things for kids that have like a zipper and shoelaces to tie and buttons to do.
Yeah.
Like a wall of doodads.
Yes.
There.
It's a Bop-It without the computer inside of it, basically.
Yes. A 2D Bop-It. Imagine a 2D Bop-It.
Picture, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I took for granted that people would know what a busy board is. Huh.
I never heard what that was until you said it.
Oh.
I knew the thing.
Okay.
But it was like the popcorn popper vacuum.
Oh.
Like the grand world of kids' toys that don't really have a name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everyone knows exactly what they are, but like,
I don't know.
Is it even trying to be a vacuum? Like, what is it? You know?
Yeah. So
busy board's a great name for it. I just never heard it before.
Yeah. Okay. I forgot that I was the person who introduced that concept.
Just to me. I don't know if you did grandly. This could be me being stupid, or it could be regional.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah. But the front face of this is kind of a clock. And there is an inscription here: "Non est ad astra molis aeteris v," which is a quote from Seneca: "There is no easy way from the earth to the stars."
Yes. True today as when it was written. The left side of the gearbox, you can set, but it's missing these cogs. And the only viable configuration reveals this drawer locked by this very simple find and rotate the four seals puzzle. We've done a lot of those. This gets you a cog and a rubber band, which we're going to use on the gearbox to do this in certain configurations. We reuse this a few times. It does a thing which I like, which it tells you if something can be removed.
Yeah.
Because that's counterintuitive to this type of puzzle game. Mm-hmm. Usually you stick something in the slot and it's there forever.
Yeah.
As soon as you place it, it says this can be removed.
Yeah. Good information to have because, I don't know, I know in inventory-based puzzle games. You know, I probably would get stuck without realizing that was a possibility, especially without like, you know, playing it on iOS when there is no cursor to mouse over and like see it change. So you stop a gear and reach into a box to get a folding key. This is a neat little object. We see
this thing.
You see the place where it needs to go. This is a little octagon where you can kind of spin these tines around to different positions on the side. And it's not just put the right shape in the right place. Sometimes you need to overlap a couple of them to actually make the shape.
Create the right shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. This puzzle reminded me a little bit of like puzzles from the more recent Resident Evil games. Mm-hmm. You do this kind of thing with shadows, you know, in the Resident Evil 7, overlapping different shadows, create different shapes, things like that.
Yeah.
Always happy to have this kind of thing. So this gets you a bigger cog. This lets you complete the gearbox. And the clockwork on the face of this busy board activates once you've completed the gearbox, granting you this tube with a photo inside. And the lid is its own key that you grab from this thing.
The photo,
the picture is a house.
Yeah, it is the house that you're in. And on the back is Rev 605. 605 is the operative thing here. That is a time for the clock, but is referring to Revelation 6:5. When the Lamb opened the third seal, I heard the living creature say, "Come." I looked, and there before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in its hand.
Yes. Scary Bible shit.
Yeah.
The tube key opens a panel on the right side of this busy board, and it's this iridescent panel with a slider. The eyepiece reveals some pieces that we can manipulate. We make the null symbol line up again. We have one final null symbol puzzle that we do that gets you what you need to reveal the clock hands, which you set it to 605. This completes the gear lock, and the whole box opens up like a dollhouse, like a Polly Pocket.
Yeah. And it takes us to chapter 3. And what we have here is a big table that the plaque on the side calls a heliocentric orrery. I have trouble pronouncing orrery. We're going to get into some Roger here a little bit. So just bear with me.
Orreries are one of the coolest things that is the hardest to say.
Yes. But the top has these circular patterns that are like orbital symbols. Eventually, this is going to turn into a projector for like a planetarium kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In one of the big kind of similar to the putting on the eyepiece and seeing all the crazy, a scale thing as we get a zoom out of this.
Yeah.
The interface, we're looking at this stuff, and then the first hint says, focus on the sides. Like, this isn't really a hint. It's just somebody telling, is there somebody here? The eyepiece reveals a fingerprint on the plaque. You slide to the side. This reveals a switch. This opens up a chamber with the next journal fragment in it.
AS feels like Null is tied to his very soul. That's alarming, considering it erases whatever it attaches to.
Shouldn't have gone into the chamber.
Nope. With the
without
device.
Disabling the mechanism. Yeah.
The nozzle. Null is tied to this great power that is elsewhere, that is outside of here. But he feels like he won't be able to control it even if he reaches it. And there is a little sketch of this astrolabe that looks like the null symbol. This is going to be a power source that we find at the end of this chapter.
Yes. There's also this small puzzle box here. The lid has a circular plate with all these paths. We need to spin it and make the paths to move this golden ball to the goal. Like a little labyrinth kind of thing.
Yeah.
This gets us to the ordinary key. Is what's called. Raises a lot of suspicions about the title of the key. And we use this to expose another vault door.
Yeah.
We do some safe cracking again, which gives us a little frame for a piece of paper with a lens pointing at it.
Yeah. From the last chapter, conspicuously, the photo is still in our inventory. So we put that there. And when you look at it, it's just a picture of the house. When you put on the eyepiece, this is where you get the little fly through of the house to the room where the orrery is. And it zooms in on this mechanism that shows the word sigil being spelled.
Yes. So we do a slide to make room puzzle here to reveal that letter input where we can do that. And we have that word sigil. Insert that and the drawer opens.
Yeah.
There's this large blue crystal with a hexagonal base and a diary page here where you learn that AS fashioned the eyepiece out of the null element and starting to show him dark visions, darker as he went further underground. Relocated his study and can't use the wine cellar anymore.
Yeah.
Heaven forfend.
one of the early, I think the first note, the first diary page you get, you know, when he discovered the, you know, that this element exists, he said, and I opened the wine. So,
yes.
You know, just a celebration and joy is draining from his life. It's being denied to him.
Yeah. He can't go down there anymore.
Yeah. This crystal, is a focus for blue light. This makes a little laser, that you kind of route around these little conduits inside, the edge of the table to, power this planetarium projection, from the top of the orrery.
Yes. The blue crystal slides into the compartment when you do this to create a blue light higher up and you focus it by twisting this aperture, which gets you to this tiny weighted flywheel. You can move around. This has you doing time button presses on inputs around the entire table, kind of moving around.
This is something you can do. I don't like it in this interaction model.
Yeah. I would agree. It's not entirely successful.
Yeah.
Here. One final step that you have to do to power up this planetary projection is to the slide mirrors, or is to slide the mirrors around the spherical cavity.
Yes.
To direct the light across this gap.
Yeah. Like there are two different mirrors on each side of this thing, you know, top, bottom, left and right. And you have to like slide it around and just kind of trial and error which mirrors in the back of the chamber it's going to hit to make sure that it can continue unimpeded. So it's like, I don't know, 18 possible, 16 possible configurations it could be.
Yes.
Yeah.
What we're doing here is there's a globe embedded on one face of this orrery that has, countries missing, basically continents missing of different shapes, and the map plugs that we had before can fit in here.
We've been finding them all over the place. Yeah.
They've just been hanging around. Once we do, we get another null symbol puzzle. And this gets us a puzzle box, which reveals a telescope on the tabletop that pops out.
Yeah. We also get the ornate wooden puzzle box, where we twist a symbol on the bottom and some flanges pop out. This, you know, it turns into a key. You socket it under the tabletop and this is where the telescope comes up. And when you look, if you looked through the telescope, if you did this stuff in a different order, it would be a telescope that pointed at nothing. You would just see, like a 4x4 grid looking through the telescope with the projection on, shows you, you know, which of the squares needs to light up. And this is the combination, the thing you need to get the final map piece.
Yes. It's showing, the wall projects a constellation on the wall.
Yeah.
Or the thing projects a constellation on the wall, which you then see. Once you put in this final map piece, there's another journal page. AS found an incantation in the Scriptus Nocti, which needs a huge power source. But he has a power source and plans to summon Astaroth/Ishtar tonight.
Yeah.
So Astaroth/Ishtar is in play.
Yep.
In case you didn't realize that.
Yeah.
This feels like such a funny escalation to me. Like, I remember the first time I played it, I'm like, what? You're summoning?
Yeah.
What's
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I was just tilting this little round thing to try to get all the balls in the holes in the maze.
Yeah. Like, I realized you were summoning things. I was refracting lasers. You know, like that game where you refract lasers. I was doing marble runs, man. So with all the map pieces, slot the table expands and this ends the chapter, bringing us into the penultimate chapter.
Yes. Which concerns itself with the tabletop and the, stars that are projected above it. Now the interface is not telling us, you know, focus on the sides. We're up here. There's a little slider, That will spin the selections of these orbit lines, you know, to line them up pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And we get the final journal page here. The summoning failed. Couldn't get Astaroth to come around.
Fuck.
What's that?
I said, fuck.
Damn it. That
feeling
he's,
went.
He's never there when you need him.
Yeah.
And AS is in increasingly worse shape. The visions are getting worse and they're more frequent. And they cause him pain, which he has to alleviate with medicine. So this guy's knocking back laudanum left and right. And he says something that is, just a little treat for Cole. The house is so much larger now. There are rooms everywhere.
Yes. That's really cool. Yeah. Like that's a Cole trope, but I think it's cool in this scenario. It's mm-hmm. context a lot, you know, yeah. The idea of your house is growing new rooms
yeah.
all the time. And these rooms being these puzzle things like this, the series of this being the room has very little to do with the room. It's really just the box.
Yes.
Later ones, you're going to more and more of these rooms that are mm-hmm. being kind of created.
Has nothing to do with rooms. Where is the box?
Well, has okay. little to do with rooms.
Okay.
Could be more to do with box than room. And at some point it crosses that threshold. Yeah. The bulk of this chapter concerns this iridescent paddle that you have to look through and manipulate things to line up these symbols.
Mm-hmm.
This makes the object that you line up real. So it's taking this like kind of reverse null thing.
Mm-hmm.
You line up the object and then the object comes to life.
Yes.
You know, in this thing, you line up the lights that form this object, mm-hmm. like Pictionary coming to life. Yeah. And this gives you a grid combination to enter for the next step.
Yeah. You go through a few of these and the last one gives you a crystal, and this device that looks like the null astrolabe that was drawn on one of the journal entries there. This is yes. the power source. We found it.
Yep. This takes us into the world of the panel itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when we use this, we actually get teleported to a realm.
Yeah.
We're under the stormy sky. And we have to rotate these stacked columns to create the null symbol. One yeah. final null symbol puzzle. One last wrap.
Yeah.
This exposes a spot for the energy source, which we put in, and it powers the portal to a far off Stonehenge.
Yeah, like a big stone arch kind of thing.
Yep. So we're fully in going through Mist Realms.
Yes.
Territory here.
Yeah.
As released, this was the end of the game
mm-hmm.
Initially, but they put in an epilogue when they did a sequel that bridges the gap between this and the sequel.
Yeah. This is a lengthy epilogue. Epilogue for me is like the slides that show at the end, you know, what the characters from the side quests are up to.
Yes.
A little bit. But this is a whole, you know, like it feels like two chapters worth of stuff here. So a yes. very generous expansion. And everything here is about the flip side of things. There's a lot of looking back and forth between things and, you know, getting hints on one side of something and then going around and doing an input on the other.
Yeah. Which, you know, since we're looking at this negative side of reality.
Yeah.
You know, is thematically consonant.
Yeah.
With this. They just introduce it really late mm-hmm. Because you get the sense that like there's a sense of making this up as they went along mm-hmm. with the series, I think.
Yeah.
As they feel like, oh, we got something here.
Yeah.
Let's tighten this up.
Yeah. I remark on that because everything before, nothing felt very connected. Like, yeah, yes. the clock with the thing about getting to the stars, you know, that was connected to the fact that the next thing was this orrery. You know, cool, whatever, mm-hmm. but like not really mechanically connected here. No. This actually has like a consistent theme. And this is more in the direction of something I appreciate this a little bit more. Yeah.
It's also the direction the sequels yes. move in.
Yeah.
You know? So we start out, we're pulled through this machinery until we're in this big clockwork chamber with another device on a table. This is like a mechanical hat box. So imagine a steampunk hat. there's a diary fragment here. That has AS describing what it's like to be pulled here. You're following in his footsteps.
Right.
Something is drawing me in. In case you're with me, I'll try to guide you along the path. I pray you never came. I pray you were just another of my dreams.
Yeah. And there's a drawing with some piano keys here. Two of them are marked out with X's. That's something we're going to yes. need to start a puzzle later on. Yes. So you flip a switch and it reveals the operative parts of this hat box. There's a row of symbols with like sliding selectors, and another gearbox, to play with.
Yep.
And this gearbox, it's like a witness puzzle. This feels like something from like, the Seventh Guest a little bit.
With this thing, you have to slide this gear around to make it spin so other gears will flip to their on or off state.
Yes.
And also have it end up in these two different slots. So there are two different valid paths to solve this puzzle. You can have it land in either of these slots. This nets you this puzzle orb with a key inside.
Yeah. I call it a puzzle orb. It's not a puzzle. You just have to inspect it and see that it is, you know, one sphere within another sphere. And then you just line up a symbol by spinning the inner one. The gearbox, it also revealed which symbols to pick on the selector, which gets you a star key that activates the top of this hat box, giving you one of the more frustrating elements of the end here, this rotating cylinder with a switch on one side and some compartments on the other. Again, it's a cylinder within a cylinder, so like different things will be exposed on the other side as you you know, manipulate it on the near side, right?
So you do that. You basically, you have to set it to the correct position, rotate it around, grab stuff on the other side. This would be a thing that would work much better in real life.
Yes.
You know, this is a thing where the interface, as much as it is doing work to feel tactile and simulate actually futzing around with devices, falls down a little bit.
For me, physically turning the thing or like just moving to the other side would feel much more intuitive. Like this is
much faster.
This is much faster, but also like here's like just, it reminds you of the artifice a little bit. Everything in this is artificial, but it's like, oh, okay, now rotate your view and try and keep in mind where you had it set.
Well, one of the reasons why I think this is a good game is that previous to this, and in most cases, I think it hides that artifice better than it needs to. You know, better than a lot of games do. You know, this is a thing where its reach kind of exceeds its grasp. This would be a thing I would love to have them revisit in the VR version, this kind of thing.
You get a handle here, which pulls out a small keyboard. And you get... God, to call this a puzzle is actually a little bit generous. You play Simon with it. Like
it's teaching you how to play the theme song to the game.
Yes.
When we say keyboard, we don't mean like a QWERTY keyboard, a musical keyboard, you know? And you're just matching the tune. This is one of those things that I think that game designers are in a real spot with, you know, because they want to do puzzles like this where you play music. It's difficult though, because everyone has different senses of tone. You know, like you end up looking at Loom, right? Like the first game I knew to do this, where the normal mode basically has things like this, like Simon. And then you put it on advanced mode and you have to hear it by ear. And puzzle it out. And I can just imagine like that. That's fun for me to do. I can imagine people losing their fucking minds. At it.
my cousin who had missed. Who had missed was stuck on the puzzle to get into the Selenetic age over in that rocket ship where you have to get the notes that you play from the journal and then set the, you know, set those sliders to play the right pitch for the melody as it goes. And he just could like, just like, it just didn't work for him, which is very funny because he ended up like composing music.
Well, it's a thing where like I'm very sympathetic to that. Because there are things that just don't work for me as well. Just the way brains work. It's just, it's one of those things I like to remember when I get, if somebody is like, oh, it's stupid that you don't want there to be color puzzles in The Witness because they made them optional and you just can't do them. And then I want to come back and be like, it's stupid that you want this easy mode in Loom. You know, it's stupid that you don't want this miss thing because you can't hum a melody. And like recall it. You know, it's just different brains. So I have to remind myself that like, it is just,
it's different brains.
Different brains here. So they, I think this is a compromise. I imagine if they were really doing it, this would have been more like The Mist. If they had their druthers, but I understand them not doing it that way because of, I mean, really for ultimately good reasons.
Accessibility, right?
Accessibility, which is a good reason to do something.
It's
just kind of one of those things where once you start putting the assets and the flavor into something, it's hard to cut it if it doesn't work for accessibility. So a lot of times I feel like game developers will still err and will instead just do the easiest version of it all that kind of makes it a nothing. That's kind of what this feels like. I will always play with a little video game keyboard. It's the number one thing that makes the new Final Fantasy look cool to me. The piano. It's like, that looks cool. You know, the old one was cool. I played the shit out of that.
Yeah.
But I just, it's not very much of a puzzle.
Yeah. When you say this is more accessible, it is not like playing a melody that you need to match, you know, by knowing what key makes what. You see the keys press. It's like a little player piano. Yeah.
Yep. It's a follow. It's also just two chords.
Yeah.
That go down to, you know, intervals here. you do that. That's the theme song for the game.
I know.
It's
I know.
Effective. Yeah.
It just, it's just funny. Just like as a, to say that to somebody who doesn't understand music, just like, oh yeah, just hit these chords, dummy.
Exactly. It's one of the, it reminds me also of, like the joke where it's like the New York Times seems smart until they write about something you know about.
Yes.
You know, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
You do this, you match the inputs. And this, you get this diamond key here, which opens the back of the spinning column that we have that's on top of this box, with this input for different symbols that we have from around the dial. And as this inner column spins into different positions, I mentioned you have to flip around and check which of the symbols are exposed.
Yeah.
So again, you're looking at the other side of things.
Yeah.
And these are the ones that you need to input here.
Yes. Yeah. It's just, can you remember what symbol was where, between the time where you rotate around this?
Yes. Yeah.
So you get a numerical combination by doing this, and also by spinning four prisms that are opened up. You have to like get them in the right spot and then look at an angle. And you get what works for me, but I could understand being really frustrating for a lot of people because this is spatial conception. You get this iridescent panel that pops out. And looking through it on one side shows you this 2x2x2 cube that you can turn handles to rotate. And some of the sides, like some of the pips on the side of this dice, are marked with empty slots. The reverse side of this panel has four little tiles that need to be slid in from different sides. And it's just 2D on this side. So you have to rotate the cube while knowing what's going on the opposite side of what you're looking at to get the pip in the right place to slide, to accept one of the sliding tiles.
Yeah. Like imagine you're looking at a dice, you know, and you're flipping back and forth between, just the 2D image of one side of the dice and a dice you can rotate, you know, and switching back and forth between these two screens.
Yes.
If that makes sense. That's the kind of visualization you're doing. I like 3D visualization as a thing. And they played in the space a little bit with the keys from before, like looking at how would this key look from this angle to do this. This is kind of a more advanced version of that. Like this is a 3D visualization stuff before. This is a trickier version of it.
When you were in high school, did they ever make you take a test that involved like a bunch of these? I have no idea. Like,
what would the shape look like upside down?
Yeah, you know, like what would the shape look like upside down, or like if you folded this shape, if you folded this into a shape, like what 3D shape would it make? And it gives you a bunch of other ones. Like I understand what that is testing for, you know, like just spatial reasoning. But the output of that, it was part of like a bunch, you know, the output of that was like a job suggestion for you. It's like you would good for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that way about 90% of what I learned in high school, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a lot of the things that, I mean, this is just going to sound Gary.txt, but like a lot of the things we learned did not directly apply, you know, this, at least I appreciate those because they were at least like, it felt like a basic building block.
Yeah.
Of thought, like it was in the category of teaching you to think better rather than having you memorize things.
Right.
And I was so hungry for anything like that in high school.
Yeah.
You know, where I was like, yeah, this is cool. I like being able to figure this out. Like I can feel my brain working.
Yes.
When I'm doing this in a way that I did not feel my brain working when I was reciting the year the Magna Carta.
Right.
Was signed, you know, like it was a neat thing. But yeah, it doesn't map onto anything.
It's just
to train you for this moment. It's actually, you are using it in your job.
I am. Oh, fuck.
Like it actually, the fucking hoisted, dude. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this trained you for this moment.
No, I didn't say it was useless. No, just I'll accept the hoist. I'll accept the hoist. Yeah.
But yeah, that was that. Yeah, I hadn't thought about those in a while.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I'm sure there have been, but I'm kind of surprised there wasn't a game that is largely based on that.
I mean, I feel like I've seen them in Layton.
I've seen them from time to time. Yeah. It feels like a mechanic that some puzzle wank could like spin out.
Yeah.
Into a larger thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regardless, this reveals kind of a sliding tile puzzle, where again, it's a panel that you're looking at both sides of, but some of the pieces in this diamond configuration have gems. You want to get the jewels. So you have to get each of the gem pieces down into this, you know, one of the spaces where there's a slot where you can go around the other side and get the gem out of the little cage that's in the tile.
Yep. And these will fit into the slots on the table.
Yeah.
Once you put this in, there's a circle of glass there that if you view it with the eyepiece, it reveals some 3D bendies in the air. And you have to shuffle these slotted gems so the 3D shape makes sense after you rotate it.
Yes.
This is kind of that, like when you talked about taking puzzle boxes and have extra steps.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of what it does.
Yeah.
Like you have to go back and forth between looking at the 3D shapes and looking at the gems, and you're doing it to make them rotate here.
Yeah.
You do a very long move this thing through a maze a little bit. You know, move the thing through the maze that you can shift around puzzle, like moving the little thing at the top. And this reveals a bright blue gem at the center of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do this twice along with another null symbol puzzle. Wouldn't be the room without that. And this ornate doorway opens up.
Yeah. And we proceed further toward the null, toward wherever AS went.
Yes.
And it ends with a fun little slide, just, you know, black text on a white background, you know, saying you have completed the game, unflustered, I hope, as there will surely be sterner tests to come, and assuring you that, yes, there is no way back for either you or AS. This is not a rescue mission. You are trapped. Press forward with heart, my friend. There are many more rooms ahead. Capital R rooms.
Four of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit of a format stretch for this show, but I think these are cool games.
Yep.
They are trifles, right? And they're not super rigorous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about this before. I am not a hardcore puzzle wank.
Right.
There are, you know, I can get into puzzles, but it's really important to me that they either be of a certain level of tenor and novelty, you know, so this has that tenor and novelty for me, or they are intuition based.
Yeah.
You know, we talk making intuitive leaps.
Yeah.
We talked about that in Golden Idol, right? That's what works for me in puzzles. This is novel enough. This is doing something that I think is cool, which is fiddling with little devices.
Yep.
And making little secret compartments and secrets of the universe open up, and sometimes they form portals to other worlds. And I think that's exciting and sick.
Yeah.
So I end up liking the game. It's 3 hours. It's not a kind of thing where this does not, as much as this was a graphical powerhouse, and I think this is worthy, it's not a thing where, like, when we say this is a good game, it's not Super Mario World. You know, we're not saying it's a good game on that level, but there's place for that.
Mm-hmm.
There is space for, I think, games that are this kind of treat.
Yeah.
You know, and they're worthy.
Mm-hmm. And it's also just kind of a different kind of mobile game, you know, than we ended up really getting.
Yes.
You know, after this, like there are some, you know, big 3D things, but, you know, they're also tied, you know, like you get Fortnite, or I think there's a Call of Duty on iPhone or something like that. But like those are tied to services. You know, it is not a product that is meant to. So it feels a little cheaper. You know, it feels like like the top part of a sales funnel, whereas this is a big and fully realized project that, you know, feels complete, right? It feels, for lack of a better word, premium. I don't know if that's exactly what I mean, but you get it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. For an iPhone game, especially in the ecosystem with which it was released.
Yes.
You know, this was in Doodle Jump times.
Mm-hmm.
And is a far sight more ambitious. Not that I'm not turning my nose up at a Doodle Jump or like Ridiculous Fishing, which is the platonic ideal of Doodle Jump.
Yes.
And the type of game. There is one of the things I think about with gaming diet is having a series of different things that are to your taste that can fit into different slots.
Yeah.
You know, and like I will play when it came out, like I, you know, it's a real cliche kind of thing now, but like I liked Angry Birds a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When it came out, I think that's a fun game.
Yeah.
You know, this physics smasher kind of thing, but that's like 2 seconds, you know, you play that and it's like 30 seconds on the bus or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have things like this, which are not quite a full gaming session, but are a great like chapter before bed.
Yeah.
you know, taking the gaming slot of a chapter of a book before bed.
Yes.
In a way. And iOS games are really great for filling up all of the little cracks and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, not that you need to always be playing a video game, but if you're in the mood for that and you only have a certain amount of time, this is what they're good for.
Yeah.
You know, and as that line has gotten blurred and we've gotten more just absolute full experiences on iPad or on phone, that line has become a little bit like lesser.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like now that it's like, well, I'm just going to play, you know, the Final Fantasy 15 mobile game. You know, that's just a full ass fucking game.
Yeah.
And you play it with a controller and you can hook it up to your TV. It's not, it's, you know, it has nothing to do with anything. You know, it's not really a mobile game at all.
Yeah.
That line, this is kind of a charming throwback to a time where there were still innovations being made.
Yeah.
In creating that form factor, I think.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, up in the development details, you know, we talked about them wanting to make a really good mobile game, you know, back before you had the backbone or Bluetooth controllers that, you know, you could hook up into your phone or whatever. You know, when you got something that was trying to mimic a big console game, it was really frustrating. Think of the Mega Man 2 or the Mega Man X ports onto iOS,
yes.
Right? Or any game that you controlled with a virtual keyboard or with a virtual dual stick, right?
Yeah, they're awful.
Yeah,
the Resident Evil 4 port that I still have on my old iPod, there, which is ludicrous.
Yeah. It's not good, right?
There are bespoke 3D Resident Evil games that only exist in that horrible form. There's one based on Degeneration that is like an airport-based Resident Evil 4 clone made by Capcom that is dead and on that system.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
Yeah.
It's impossible to play.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a whole industry, you know, outside of the doodle jumps and stuff like that, like, you know, bigger developers were really trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, which is not how you open up a puzzle box. Find the round box. You get the square peg, the square hole later.
Yes.
You know, and seeing them try and fail, and like the games that you remember are like this. Tried to adapt to the form factor, you know, like Infinity Blade, right?
Yeah.
And I just looked, Infinity Blade, not available. Whole ass games,
no.
Gone.
Yeah.
Bye. Forever.
A trilogy of good games. I've got those on that iPod too.
Nice.
Which I'm very happy about, just because that's the only way to get them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like my little PT PS4.
Yeah.
You know, sitting there. Yeah, those things, and they tend to be rewarded. You know, so like that is why there are still the Room games, and it has transitioned. Like, it's also a good Switch game. You know, it is more fun on the iPad because you have that tactile sense, but the way it can fit into your life and the charm of it is still viable on newer systems.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, it's a really interesting snapshot. The early 2010s was a really weird time for gaming as iOS became a platform.
Yeah.
And you saw these wild experiments. There were a lot more like indie breakout things, you know, that would pop up. This is where you saw people experimenting with the forum. Like, this is when like Gearwalk and Papa Sangre.
Yeah.
You know, came out around the time. Papa Sangre is a game that there's no visuals.
Yeah.
It's all audio, you know, things like that. Like, it was the first time, you know, contrast that with like the Wii U. You know, or something like that, when there are other input methods that come up that feel gimmicky.
Yeah.
Or at least to me, you know, and don't end up fitting. Like, we end up with things like drawing the runes in Castlevania DS.
Yes.
Shit like that, where it's like, yes, that's there, but it's not really, it's at its basic, like, it'd be better if it was just a Castlevania game. You know, this was a time where people were trying a lot of new interesting things, and a lot of them only really exist in that snapshot, because now all those lines have fallen down. So it's an interesting time. It's also a time where I started thinking about games closer to how I do now. You know, it's around the time we started the show.
And we bonded over some of that stuff, right? Like, you know, it was just like, oh, have you played this? Have you played that? You know, and it was a bunch of, what was that? It was like Infinity Blade, but it was, you know, in like a decrepit house, and it was range combat.
Yes.
I can't even remember what it was called.
That's also on my old iPod. But my old iPod won't charge on my computer because like it's a weird USB thing. So I still have it. There's going to be a way to make it work, I promise. I brought that to Milwaukee.
You did? Yeah,
like 4 years ago.
I fucked around with it. Yeah.
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 My old iPod Touch.
Yeah.
I have a lot of affection for that era though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a vanishing era. There are a lot of those games that are just gone.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole Metal Gear Solid 4 port.
Yep.
That just takes all of the action parts and turns them into Operation Wolf for the NES. You just tap to shoot.
Yeah. Well, they
click on bad guys' heads.
Konami did that with Silent Hill as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you're a Square sicko, there are like, I feel like 30 Squaresoft games that use Final Fantasy iconography
mm-hmm.
that all came out around that same time that are fucking bonkers, like Sliding Heroes and like, whatever the tower defense one is, where you're deploying jobs from Final Fantasy as towers. It was just a really interesting time.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of throwing some attention its way.
Yeah.
You never hear anyone talk about it.
Nope.
Thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate you.
We do.
Yeah. If you have thoughts about The Room, it is just about too late now.
Yeah.
I think you have one day to write in. It is always the 15th though. So if you have thoughts about Teardown, The Room, or Spider-Man Miles Morales, the deadline is March 15th.
Yes. If you have thoughts about April's games, which are Dandara, we are doing the Trials of Fear edition, so kind of the expanded one.
We are, but keep that the patron who suggested this, Mitch, there's some, you know, before I play stuff they sent us.
Yes.
We want to not dive too far into, we're playing that version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
There is optional challenge fuck you combat that you can accidentally fall into.
Yeah.
That we have been giving advice to avoid.
Yes.
It's
like avoiding the final like massacre level in
The White Palace or whatever.
Yeah.
In Hollow Knight.
Yeah.
So we're not necessarily going to cover all the optional challenge stuff. That is the addition.
Yes. That is the addition we're doing.
Sorry to dive on a grenade to clarify. I just don't want to set any expectations. If
no.
Like, oh man, I love the teeth pulling out Dandara endgame. You know, that's like 73 Hyper Celestes all at once. We might not do that.
Yeah, might not. If I dip into it, I'll talk about it. But
yeah.
Second game is Lunacid, which is a Kingsfield alike that we're both really excited to play. And then the premium episode for that month is Super Mario World. It's a classic. We had kind of an episode about it with other people talking about the game. We want to talk about it for real. So that is April's premium. To write in, it is always duckfeed.tv/contact, always the 15th of the month. If you have thoughts about multiple games, please separate them into multiple responses and try to keep them brief and specific.
Yeah. If you're not demographically identical to us and you have a project you'd like us to shout out, you can send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, a description, contact information, and pronunciation. And we'd be happy to do so. We don't have a one for this episode, but that's just a standing offer.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to support us, and if you want to hear that Miles Morales and Super Mario World episode, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. $5 a month gives you all those bonus episodes, as well as a bunch of other bonus shows.
Yes.
Real Lich Hours, in case you are playing Baldur's Gate 3 or have played it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going through that. Shadow of the Erdtree is coming out in June.
Yep.
Talking about that. So it's a Bonfireside Chat. You get a bunch of stuff.
You do. So go check that out. Rate and review us if you can, whatever podcast directory you get us from, and post about us. Help spread the word. We don't advertise.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. And join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen. Episode.
Yeah. Thank you, Gwen. Until next time, what should they watch out for?
Watch out for that lament configuration that is coming my way in 3 days.